Welcome to Alphabet Scoop. For those who are just now tuning in, this is a podcast from the team at 9to5 Google where we cover everything that's happening in Google from A to Z. So thanks a lot for joining us. Basically, this show is where we share all of our thoughts on the week's most important Google and Alphabet stories. And faithful to the show's name, we'll do our best to throw in some rumors and things we've heard from people close to the Mountain View company whenever we can. So let's get started. I'm Stephen Hall, and this is my colleague Abner Lee joining me once again. How's it going, man?
Excited as always.
Yeah, this is episode 6, correct? And yep. I guess the 7th one we've done. So we're getting into the swing of things, I guess.
Definitely reached a groove.
Yeah, it's getting more fun as it goes on, I think, because the process becomes less annoying because we know what we're doing. And putting the story or the podcast notes together and just the whole process of getting this produced and uploaded and out for all of our listeners, just getting easier as time goes on. So I guess for the first of our many stories for the day, we have Android P navigation. Once again, I think this is probably the third week we've talked about navigation in Google's mobile operating system, right?
And it never gets less controversial.
Yeah, if anything, it's just gotten worse the more that we've learned. Especially this week, we put out our renders, or I put out some renders, thanks to a new member of the 9to5 Google team. His name's Alex Brooks, and he's working and helping us with basically helping us put together renders for, you know, stories, information that we're hearing from various sources that, you know, we don't have the skills with Photoshop or or Illustrator or whatever to make. So he's helping us put basically the things we're hearing into visuals, which is very helpful, I think, for our readers, as we found this week. Got a lot of traction on this story about the new navigation and recent multitasking UI, and we basically did a rundown on how it works.
So this comes as last week, last Friday, Google leaked a screenshot of the new navigation pill, the new home pill button that we saw did not have a recent multitasking icon.
Yeah, and it's, as you mentioned, it's been really controversial. I think Ron from Ars was the first person to spot that screenshot, and even when he only, you know, all he had was that screenshot, and he wasn't aware of, you know, we'd mentioned on Alphabet Scoop, I think a couple weeks prior, that we were hearing about this exact design, and he obviously wasn't aware of that because he was kind of taken aback by it. And a lot of people in that thread, even that thread, which, you know, the public had no idea what we were looking at that point, people were already kind of freaking out that maybe this meant the end of the multitasking button. And I guess that has kind of come to a head this week with my renders being posted and people kind of taking them seriously. And then yesterday, David Ruddock at Android Police, his op-ed. And I think on our Android over at Reddit and on Twitter, the community at large is just so opposed to this change. And part of me just really likes to be a contrarian, and, you know, that's just a problem that I need to fix about my personality, I think.
But, never change. Well, not.
Yeah, but the other half of me actually does think that this is better. And I think David did a pretty good job, I think, of summarizing the situation. I think, long story short, is that this is the direction that smartphone user interfaces are going, and no matter how many hundreds of Android fanboys really, really want their physical navigation bar buttons, I think this is the way that things are going, and I think Google would be foolish not to jump on the train while it's still at the station, so to speak.
Fair. So yeah, we have that new look, which may or may not fit into the rest of Android P's rumored upcoming design language. So there's the quick criticism that has arisen is how this obviously replaces the multitasking button, because when you have a gesture, why would you want to replicate it? And the biggest concern is for people who have fallen in love with how you can now quickly double tap the multitasking button to return to your previous app. This gesture is widely adored, but as you've argued, there are better ways to do this.
Yeah, I think the iPhone X does it really well. But before we get into that, I think I have to say that I'm very fond of that gesture as well. I mean, our readers probably know this, but I tend to be a little bit more aware of how iPhones work than the average kind of closed-minded Android user. Because I think for the last few years, I've pretty much, this last 6 months has been an exception. But for most of the time, I've kind of wielded both an iPhone and an Android phone, usually a Pixel or a Nexus phone, as my daily devices. So I've had a lot of time comparing them side by side, and I have to say that I agree so much with the Android community at large that this double tap multitasking gesture is so great. Before I had the iPhone X, that, as an aside, I just got it this week, so I went half a year since it was announced just not using it at all. But I just got it this week, and before that, I completely agree with this idea that the double tap multitasking gesture on Android is so much better than how Apple has done multitasking on previous iPhones. I used the Pixel 2 and the iPhone 7 side by side for about a month last fall, or 2 months. And that was one of the things I noticed. I really do understand why people love this gesture so much, because on iOS, the alternative is double-clicking the home button and then tapping. It's three taps, and it takes a little while to double-click the home button, open the multitasking, window, and then tap on the app that you used last. And it's not as reliable, it's not as quick, it's not as easy as just double-tapping that multitasking button, especially because I feel like most of the multitasking we do on mobile phones in general is just between those two apps. We think of multitasking as this huge page of apps, but I feel like most of the time what we're doing is we're using an app, we're copying something, we're going to a different app, we're pasting it, we're jumping back to that app, we're copying something else, we're jumping back into the app we were just in and pasting it again. We're usually, when we're multitasking, we're just using two apps, and the rest of them are almost, not that important. And so in that sense, the multitasking button gesture that's so quick at just jumping back and forth is so good. But then the iPhone X comes into the picture, and that's where things change for me, as they do for a lot of other people that have been talking about this week. And for me, the iPhone X basically fixes all of the problems I've had with multitasking on iPhones before. And sadly, depending on your perspective, I think the iPhone X does navigation and multitasking better than the latest builds of Android Oreo.
Okay, there's several things to unpack there. Let's start with the common critique of removing the multitasking button. From what we've seen with what Google is doing with Android P, from what you've reported, and from what's possibly coming, there is no equivalent iPhone X swipe gesture on Android P. So while I think many people can appreciate how well the iPhone X does it, Android simply hasn't shown, because again, this is still in early days of the P developer preview, what there's even a similar concept. And at the moment, what we're stuck with is a non is only a minor gesture-based system, the swipe up on the pill to access the multitasking menu, to which replaces this beloved gesture.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think what we know so far about this gesture system that my source has used is that, yeah, it's not as feature complete, it's not as finished, and it's not as polished as the iPhone X's gesture system. Like, absolutely not. What we know so far is that you can swipe up on the pill to bring up this the multitasking tray, basically, like you said, horizontal swipes across these vertical panels. And we don't know whether or not there is, you know, I think you can head over to my Twitter to watch the video, but on the iPhone X, there is an easy gesture that lets you swipe across that bottom floating home bar. I don't know what Apple calls it. But there's a gesture for swiping across it that basically has the same functionality as double tapping the multitasking button in Android currently. And we don't know if the current implementation of what we're hearing about Android P multitasking and navigation has an equivalent. So yeah, I completely agree that as we know today, the gesture-based system that is currently in the development stage inside of Google, based on the report that I did this Monday, it's not as good. And I would probably choose the current button system over that. But I'm kind of taking, I think, the long-term view of things and saying maybe this system that we're told about is half finished, and maybe it will be more finished by the time the Pixel 3 comes out, and maybe it will launch with the Pixel 3, and maybe it will be more similar to the way iPhone 10 does things, in which case I would be 100% on board with that. Or maybe it's going to launch in this kind of half-complete form with the Pixel 3, and then next year or the year after that, it will be more complete.
I think the big complaint right now, at least mine, is how Android has this bottom navigation bar that's dedicated to navigation. And what Google seems to be doing is they're making it less useful. That navigation bar space will remain with now only two buttons, the home and the back button, and for most times maybe just that one central button. But what it appears is, what Google appears to be doing with Android P is that, I guess the question is, why are they removing the multitasking button? Do they believe that gesture navigation is the future? Or are they trying to do some drive towards simplicity? And if it's the latter case, it's not a good use of space. On the iPhone X, that home bar thingy is very subtle. It's at the bottom of the screen. It's a few pixels high, but whereas on Android you have this space, you might as well use it, and Google is clearly not using it right now.
Yeah, and I think my answer to that is the same thing that I just said, in that maybe the version that we're hearing about is not the finished version. I think that's very plausible. It's only April, and if this launches with the Pixel 3 in October, then, I mean, that's easily almost half a year for Google to iterate on this. For all we know, this could be just one of the first versions of this system, and later, when the Pixel 3 launches, it could be identical to the way the iPhone X works. I mean, I'm not sure, but I do agree with your general conclusion that it doesn't really make much sense to leave that navigation bar down there in its complete form and take away a button and replace it with a less efficient system. I completely agree that that's foolish, and that that's only going to make people upset. But if the end goal of this whole change, you know, Android navigation has been the same for a long time, several years. And if the end goal of this change, the beginnings of what we're seeing, that is this change, is to have a seamless gesture-based navigation system like the iPhone X, then I'm totally on board. And I'm willing to accept if that means the system's kind of broken for a year, I'm totally fine with it. Because I think the gesture system is so much better on the iPhone X than having the buttons that we currently have in Android. I think that's another interesting thing is what if Google's planning to leave the button-based system for, well, maybe that doesn't make sense. Basically the question I'm bringing up is the Android open source project going to adopt this new gesture-based navigation, or is this going to be, there's several elements of the UI on Pixel devices. For instance, the very uniquely designed home button that's only on the Pixel. Is this something that Google's working on for its specific phones? Is Google going to customize Android even further with this Google slash Pixel version of Android? We call it stock Android, but it's not really stock Android. It's Google Android. And maybe what if Google's working on this navigation system specifically for the Pixels? That's a possibility. I could also see it being a possibility that they leave an option in the settings menu for enabling or disabling this new system versus the old button-based navigation system. But I would probably be against that because I think Google really needs to decide which direction they're going to prevent like fragmentation in how apps work.
Definitely, Google needs to make a choice. What's been awesome about Google in recent years is their willingness to take more concrete choices. On a similar note,
Totally.
for the average user, what do you think is easier to use? Gestural, like the iPhone X, or the current navigation buttons as is? Because I would think it's the current system. Buttons are blatantly there. They're not hidden. They're obvious.
I think using the iPhone X for this last week, I think it's just as intuitive, if not more, than the button-based system. But I don't have any comment on whether or not the current, version of gesture-based navigation that Google's working on that we posted about. I don't know if that would be more intuitive because it's just, like I said, it just doesn't seem finished. But I think the gesture-based navigation is, I mean, you have to also consider the benefits, which are, on the iPhone X, for example, you get barely any bezel on the bottom of the display, and you don't have that huge black bar in the way, that could be used for, space for actual app content. And in terms of usability, I don't know. I don't know if I handed my iPhone X to my mom right now. I don't know if she would, who's just generally not, tech savvy. I don't know if she would be able to grasp the gesture-based nav very quick. But yeah, I don't know. I just don't know. I think based on my impression this week, I think that it's very intuitive. I think if Google just straight copied it, it would be a benefit in the long run. But I do agree, buttons are pretty straightforward. You can't miss them.
Anyways, some minor things I want to add is, so at the moment, I think the navigation bar is go the physical space for navigation bar is sticking around for a while. So as we saw with the first P developer preview, Google is doing this new auto rotation lock, which exists purely in the navigation bar. With it like auto appears when needed. So if they're sticking with that concept, which a lot of people like, I think they're going to keep the bar, which is not the most symmetrical thing because the interface is going to be so left heavy without multitasking. Again, Google could change the interface. But also another thing, if I'm looking at the screenshot that Google leaked on last Friday, and in my opinion, if Google were to improve on this design, there needs to be more space between the back button when it appears and when it doesn't appears, and the home button, the pill, or just make it wider, because at the moment, if Google were to stick with a two gestural interface in the future, there definitely needs to be more space to move around.
Yeah, I agree, and that's an interesting point that you bring up. The button for changing the orientation of the display would be down in the navigation bar, and that was something that was added specifically in P. So the question is it, you know, a leftover feature from something that Google was experimenting with? Is it actually going to be in the navigation bar in the final release of Android P, and is the navigation bar sticking around with this pill-based design, or is Google ditching the navigation bar entirely, maybe? I mean, who knows? I think that the leak we published this week, the fact that it happens to perfectly align with the screenshot that Google published itself, means that this is something that is, you know, it's probably being widely tested internally. If our source had used it themselves and also happened to somehow land on a developer's blog in the form of a screenshot, to me, that means, you know, at least two phones internally at Google have this UI. And I would guess if there's two and that one of them took the screenshot for this developer's blog post, that is probably pretty widespread. I would guess that this UI is well known internally. And if it's widespread, then that would suggest to me that it's in the closer stages to being finished and maybe more likely to be what we actually see with the full release of Android P. And that conclusion would align with the problem that you see with that button for the orientation. You're right. It is a weird, it's a mess, because with that button and the back button that's contextual and the pill, that leaves all of the interaction on the left side of the screen, which is just weird from a visual standpoint.
And yeah, as I mentioned earlier, Google, I noted Google was good for taking some more direction and order over the last few years. And as we head into I/O, if Google is making a switch to this new navigation, I really hope they blatantly say and explain on stage why they're doing this. What is the justification? Maybe going to gestures is a part of a new material design thing, or just a new take. But I just hope, whatever reason, is they have a thorough, well-thought explanation for all this, because hopefully it's more than visual, that they have a good insight into what could be better in mobile operating systems.
Yeah, totally. And I think that based on what we've seen over the last couple of years, that they will do that. Although, I think if I were to bet right now on what's going to happen, I would probably guess that we're not going to see this in Developer Preview 2. And that it will either debut alongside the Pixel and with the final build of Oreo or of P, or
it's like a 9.1 feature.
No, I don't think that's as likely as the potential that it could be a Pixel specific feature.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just a blind guess based on what we know right now. I could be wrong. But I think that's pretty much all we have on that topic.
Moving on, yesterday evening, we had some big-ish news in the form of chat. A piece in The Verge yesterday revealed that the company's new messaging answer platform solution is RCS, Rich Communication Services, the successor to SMS. We've known this about a while, but
a really long time.
Google is going to call it chat. That's going to be the consumer-facing name, the consumer-friendly name, and probably how they're going to advertise it.
But yeah, it sounds like Google convinced all of their partners to call it that, too.
Yeah, which is a big deal for consistency-wise, because the worst thing that could happen is that consumers on different carriers think that they can't reach each other, or that some of these new features are only limited to certain users, and that'd be just a bloody mess, if I say so. So hopefully this chat name helps allay all those fears. So far, RCS adoption in the US is T-Mobile, I believe. I'm not
quite sure. And
Sprint. And Sprint, okay. And the Post revealed that AT&T and Verizon, the big two in the US, have signed on. So, again, for just the US, it looks promising that Google is getting all of these companies to make a big adoption.
Yeah, so it looks like basically this announcement is not really an announcement of any product or any service, because it's not an app. It's not called Google Chat. You know, for anyone that's listening that, you know, might be confused on exactly what's happening here. It's basically just a new name for RCS. But the news, I guess, is multifaceted. One of the things being that it's pretty significant that Google has signed on 11 different OEMs, Android OEMs, two different operating system makers, Google itself, obviously, and Microsoft.
Which is very interesting.
Yes. And so, you know, announcing that they've, and like you mentioned, the all the major US carriers. So all of these companies basically had to come together to put together this puzzle, which is the eventual rollout of RCS, which for those who are completely unfamiliar, is basically the next evolution of SMS messaging technology that has been in the works for a long, long time.
Yes.
And so basically this announcement is Google saying, hey, we got all the companies on board, we got the operating systems, we got the carriers. This is for real happening. And we've known, you know, that RCS is coming, but we didn't have a laid out vision from Google and basically this story from The Verge. And, you know, we're waiting for Google to make their own formal announcement, but it looks like this Verge post might have been their formal announcement, because they gave The Verge interviews, it looks like. And so that, along with the fact that lots of new features are coming to Android Messages, is basically the story here.
Yep, it is Android Messages, which I believe Google announced in February of 2017 as Android's default RCS client. So features from RCS that we've long known about are things like read receipts, typing indicators, full resolution images and video, a better group texting experience. We've known about these features. But last night's post revealed that Messages for Web is a thing that is happening. We were able to get a pretty good look of it ahead of time from our APK insights into the Android Messages app several times, which is basically allows you to access and send text messages from the web, which is a wonderful feature, truly.
Yeah, even iMessage users can't do that, so take that, Apple.
Yes, the web, the powerful web. Meanwhile, we've also known about Smart Reply, with Smart Reply actually live already for Project Fi customers. But the interview also revealed Google Assistant coming to Android Messages and Google Photos integration, because Google Photos and Android Messages and this chat effort are now led by the same VP at Google, which is nice. Which leads us to the other news of last night, which I personally think is the bigger news, is that Google Allo is pausing investment. Google is pausing investment on Allo.
So basically, it looks like all of the work that we've been tracking so closely in APK Insight, you and Dylan have done such a great job of tearing down Google Allo. Allo has been basically, I think, one of the most actively developed apps at Google in terms of, you know, adding features at such a rapid pace. We've done probably more APK Insights on that app than any app. And so all of those features, obviously Google's not just throwing away all of that time and effort and money. You know, they've however many engineers working on that app and have for such a long time. All of that functionality is basically, it looks like they're just going to copy and paste it and put it in Android Messages. And along with this, The Verge says that pretty much the entire team that was working on Allo is now going to be working on Android Messages, which means that Allo is basically dead. It got caught in the crossfire, I guess, kind of, and is the result of Google focusing on Messages now, and they say they're now, quote, pausing investment in Google Allo. And I guess that's not really that surprising, is it?
No, because interestingly, and I don't know many people noticed, the last Allo update was in January, I believe. We've gone a good 3 months without any updates whatsoever, while Duo, which is closely in line with Allo since the announcement, is rapidly gaining new features. So this was clearly telegraphed. There's a clear significant change in how Google decided to pursue the messaging strategy in recent months, and hopefully we're now starting to see it.
Yeah, I guess, you know, a Google app, any other Google app, if it had gone a couple months or a few months without any significant features, it might not have been as noticeable. It might not have seemed it wouldn't have seemed as notable. But Allo was so actively developed ever since its announcement in 2016. It seemed like they were working like clockwork, right? Like every week or two, there was like some new significant feature that they added. And so, yeah, I mean, it was definitely an abrupt stop to its development in January. And so maybe it seems very likely that development of that app stopped around then, and it's just been a few months that those developers have already been transferred over to the Messages team, and you know, we just weren't aware of it until yesterday.
With the death of Allo, we're starting to get to see a larger picture forming, namely that how Google gave up on making a messaging app which they complete control end to end, and can talk about how RCS does not have end-to-end encryption, which is something you've mentioned was pretty concerning.
I'm optimistic, I think, about RCS's adoption in the long term, but it's just, I think, notable that in the political climate that we're in today with the drama surrounding Facebook, and it seems like many Americans kind of opening their eyes to the way their personal data is being mishandled in some cases. I'm not saying that Google's necessarily a culprit in this, but I think with the narrative that's happening around encryption and basically how users are becoming more conscious of which companies and which apps and which services, and not to mention the government, how they access and use our personal information. And I think that Apple has been touting the encryption of iMessage, as not to mention the security of iPhone in general, as a very big selling point they're able to say, hey, if we wanted to access your messages and hand them over to the government, we couldn't even do that if we wanted to. And unfortunately, chat, the carriers and Google and the Android makers won't be able to say the same thing. And
Nope.
it will be interesting to see if that really means anything to consumers.
Yeah, because with RCS, it'll. Yeah, because with RCS, how the government, how local authorities, police authorities can access your data will be exactly like SMS. It'll be the same rules in terms of access. Versus a technological solution which ensures that it wouldn't be possible. Another thing we discussed earlier was how, in terms of, will Apple adopt RCS, given that how there's wide consensus, especially with AT&T and Verizon joining?
Yeah, Dieter seemed pretty optimistic in his post, saying even that sources close to RCS, I'm not quoting him directly, but he apparently has sources close to this ongoing development, that say Google and Android makers and the carriers are in talks with Apple about potentially supporting RCS. But as we all know, Apple's not really one to just fall in line. But yeah, I think it will have a significant impact on whether or not chat is widely used or widely adopted. I mean, well, it'll be used. I mean, because if it entirely supplants SMS and MMS, then it will be used. But I think it will be interesting to see how will this affect the ongoing Android versus iOS war in the United States as a whole. I think that's the interesting narrative and the interesting story here is that I think a recent survey showed that something like, I don't know, 75% of people or 80%, some very large percentage of smartphone buyers under the age of 25 or something like that. I don't know exactly which study it was, but in the last week we published a story at 95 Google saying or 95 Mac. Showing that a very large majority of smartphone buyers are looking to get an iPhone for their next phone. And obviously, we know that iMessage has a lot of staying power. It draws a lot of people to iOS because they have a lot of family members and they have a lot of friends who use iMessage. It's pretty ubiquitous at this point.
And it's in the
And
cultural lingo, the green bubble, blue bubble debate.
yep, there's absolutely a cultural connotation there. And then, it'll just be interesting to see how chat impacts this whole story that's playing out of how successful will the Google Pixel be? How successful will Samsung remain? I mean, Samsung's obviously dominant even in the United States. But I think it'll be interesting to see how chat will change the story of or impact the story of which platforms people are attracted to. Because I think, honestly, I carry both an Android and an iPhone with me pretty much every day. Like I said, I haven't for the last 6 months, but when I do, it's because of iMessage. It's only solely because of iMessage. And that's because my wife and my siblings and my siblings-in-law and my mom and my mother-in-law and pretty much all of my friends, almost all of them use iMessage. And so it sounds silly, but I'm kind of alienating myself from people in my life if I'm not on the same primary messaging platform as them. And I think that means something to people, to normal people, maybe not to us as much as the average person. And I'm hoping that chat will, the wide adoption of RCS will potentially be Google's saving grace, especially if Apple adopts it. I think it will be, if Apple adopts it soon, then it will definitely serve to Google's advantage, I think.
For what it's worth, I'm pretty confident in Apple adopting RCS purely because I don't see Apple in 10 years or 20 years still relying on the SMS standard. I'm not sure if SMS, MMS would even be around then. So purely on the fact that Apple eventually has to move and upgrade to something, do I see iOS eventually supporting RCS as a standard. But on that note, I can imagine how that this chat thing might even make it worse. Again, I was hopeful in the beginning that the name would definitely help people switch to a new platform. But at the same time, I'm afraid that this is going to be even more confusing, that Google is actively highlighting chat as a feature that could alienate or even make consumers worry that their Android device uses this chat thing, and they might already know that iMessage already is a thing on Apple that just works. So I can see the potential of it backfiring. But I also want to dive into how Google is actively deciding that they're not going to make their own app in a space where services like Facebook Messenger or WhatsApp have billions of users. Of course, Google has Hangouts Chat for work, but in the grand scheme, I think this is a loss. While the current form of chat might be good for consumers, I think it speaks to a huge failure of Google in, what is it, 7 years since Hangouts was announced, an utter failure to make a messaging app that people like and use and brand one as such. So I think that Google is committed to chat. They placed a very good vice president, the vice president of photos, in charge. But at the same time, I think that, who knows, maybe 2 years, 5 years down the road, there might be a space when another app is needed, because the rest of the world, SMS usage is low. So many people use something like WhatsApp. That's why Facebook bought it for billions. And I think that, well, at the moment, chat is the most coherent vision Google has offered and the best chance of succeeding, purely because it's the thing that comes after SMS. I think we're getting to a point where eventually there might be the need for a different approach for Google.
Let's try and think through kind of like, you know, you're saying that you think you feel confident that Apple's going to adopt RCS because you think that SMS is going to hit end of life. And so how does that play out? I guess the step one is Google convinces carriers to go all in on RCS, which is basically what it seems like.
Yes, it's happening.
That's what happened yesterday, basically. Is they've convinced AT&T and Verizon and T-Mobile and Sprint to do RCS, which effectively, as a technology, replaces SMS and MMS. And I guess step two of this, you know, would look like, okay, we're looking at it's late 2019. RCS is entirely rolled out across all four major U.S. networks. And the carriers decide to turn off SMS and MMS support because they don't need it anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that would work from a technological standpoint. Would they keep SMS online to keep supporting devices that don't support RCS for a while? I mean, would SMS, you know, as a technology, you know, maybe stop working in 2024 or whatever? Let's say the second step is that SMS and MMS are no longer used as a majority. And serve as the primary technology, and carriers have no reason to support it anymore. In that case, does Apple? I guess like the question becomes: is there any competitive advantage to Apple supporting RCS? Is there any reason they should? I guess the main reason, maybe you can think through this with me, is they want their phones to be able to communicate with the cell phones from other makers. You know, maybe it becomes a feature of the iPhone is that you can talk to people who don't have iPhones. And so supporting RCS from that, you know, perspective makes sense. But then again, if the way RCS works is that, you know, if you send RCS to someone who doesn't have RCS, it basically falls back to SMS. That's the way it's going to work. And so if that happens and it just falls back to SMS, then Google or iPhone users can still communicate with RCS users. It's just going to be over SMS. And so again, what incentive does Apple have to, is there any business use, any, and is there any business case for Apple to go out of its way to add support for this feature, if the only thing that this feature does is let non-iPhone users better communicate with iPhone users? It seems like it only benefits one side of the equation.
Okay, and you said business. What's the business case? So that's, I think, closely tied to business is the consumer reaction, consumer satisfaction, a stat which Apple likes to tout. So the features of RCS, like read receipts and typing indicators, and full-res images and videos, I think those are noticeable, appreciably noticeable to the consumers, to end users. And what I don't know right now is who, what's, which party, whether it's going to be Google and its carrier partners or Apple, consumers are going to blame when they see a drop off in quality. Say they're talking with their friends and they get sent this low-res version, while on Android, an Android friend of theirs got a high-resolution copy, or is talking about these features like read receipts and typing indicators. It, in my opinion, I think consumers are going to see, they're going to benefit from these simple and understandable advances to SMS technology, this age-old technology. So the question is, who do you think consumers are going to fault when they don't get these features, when they notice these discrepancies?
Right, but then again, I mean, again, iMessage is a selling point, and it's only a selling point if you're able to compare it to something that's noticeably worse. And SMS is noticeably worse because you can barely send media over it, and it doesn't have read receipts, and it's slower, and et cetera, et cetera. Whereas if Apple just jumps on board with RCS, then there's no noticeable difference between people who are using iPhones over iMessage and people who are not using iPhones over RCS, and that makes iMessage less compelling, or it makes iMessage less special, I guess, in comparison. Like, it just seems like it serves to Apple's advantage to leave Android users in the Stone Age. So, before we move on to our next topic, we just wanted to mention that we got a tip that there is a one and really interesting feature coming to Android Messages, or at least in early prototype stages for Android Messages, and we just wanted to mention it here so that everyone listening is aware that this is at least in the works, because it's pretty cool. Basically, this feature is based on Google Assistant, would work over RCS, and would basically allow both users, it would detect the location basically of both users, and give you contextual recommendations through Google Assistant based on where you both are. So Assistant in Allo right now and soon to be in Messages is already really smart, but this is an interesting feature that would they our tipster uses the example of, you know, you could one user can be typing out Starbucks or McDonald's or something, and it would use both of your locations to give you a little pop-up basically to recommend a Starbucks that's actually near both of your locations. So it's pretty interesting to see that Google's working on kind of more like deeper integrations with RCS and with your location data and with things to make assistants smarter and more useful in messages, because I don't know about you, Abner, but in Allo, at least the little bit I've used Allo, well, I've used Allo a lot, but I don't know about you, Abner, but in my experience using Allo, I definitely don't use the assistant feature hardly at all.
So generally speaking, I've used it in Messenger. Facebook Messenger has this feature, has a similar assistant-like feature, where when you suggest let's meet up at such and such time, it'll say, "Do you want me to plan an event?" And personally, it is the most annoying thing ever. And I've got similar insights from friends. Hopefully, if Google Assistant is doing it, and Google in general, it can be a tiny bit more tasteful so that it's not just annoying pop-ups everywhere. Because these suggestions from assistants are honestly could reach a point where it's just the modern day pop-up.
Yeah, I think overall I'm just really excited to see, what Google continues to do with Messenger, and hopefully this year we'll see new features and additions roll out as quickly as we've been seeing them come to Allo over the last couple of years. Next up, we have Google reportedly interested in acquiring Nokia's health division, formerly called Y-Things, right?
So, yeah, there was this interesting rumor from a French publication that Google is interested in acquiring Nokia Health. So, a little bit of background. Nokia has been struggling to monetize its this health division that makes smart gadgets like watches and sensors, body scales, and whatnot. And this French publication, interestingly, said that Nest is the party interested in buying it. Neither party has confirmed. For that part, Nokia hasn't really said that they're definitely going to sell this Nokia Health Division. But at the end of the day, if Google does buy it, the implications are fascinating. For one, if Nest is buying it, this could be before, after the Nokia. If Nest is the one buying it, which this timing could be before, after Google decided to bring Nest back into the loop, it could be an interesting expansion of Nest going beyond the smart home into a more of a health division of a general. Making more gadgets that fit into your life.
Yeah, I think it'll be really interesting to see if it's kind of confusing because this report's coming out, not long after Google decided to bring Nest back into Google proper. So to me, it sounds like this was a negotiation that was happening before Nest came back. Because it's weird that the report kind of positions Nest as the buyer, whereas if all of this was happening in the timeline of after it came back into Google, I don't think that it would really be the narrative would be that Nest was looking to buy. It would be more like Google is looking to buy and maybe put it under the same division as Nest. I'm not sure, but either way, Google or Nest looking to pick up Nokia's health division, it would be, if this happened, it would definitely be an expansion of Google's hardware offerings, which we already know are expanding already. I joked on Twitter, one of Nokia Health's like more popular products was a smart scale, and so I joked that Google should release a Pixel scale by Google. And I think it would be good for Google to have this line of products. But again, this has been a conversation we've been having since Google first started, taking hardware seriously, is that how comfortable do people really feel? I mean, the home definitely has this implication, is how comfortable do people really feel with Google having access to to their data, and with Nokia Health being under the umbrella, I mean, the data is just getting more and more personal.
The one way out of it I could see is how Nest, the reason they're doing it under Nest is because, well, Nest isn't Google, or at least it's not them directly, and Nest has a track record of making separate products that are divided from Google. Of course, all this changed when Nest came back into the Google fold, but I think that the reason that the Nest name was so kept in these negotiation discussions is that maybe it wouldn't be a Google branded smart scale, so much for that scale by Google, but rather that Nest is the one that makes all these products. That in itself is a very interesting expansion of Nest's products and its product lineup and providing a more full experience for the rest of your life. But I think this is kind of out the window, that these advantages of the Nest name on the product is gone with this Nest being brought back into Google proper. Well, we really do have to see how Nest runs independently or not.
I agree that the Nest brand would be helpful with kind of easing consumers' minds. But you have to remember that the main point of Google bringing Nest back into Google is that they wanted to integrate the software that Google's working on for their hardware products more closely with Nest's products. Just as one interesting anecdote, I remember we met with Nest PR for the announcement of the Nest Cam IQ a few days before it was announced, and we were talking about the Nest Cam IQ's facial recognition, and we asked, okay, so is the Nest Cam IQ going to tap into your Google account and basically use the data that Google already has in Google Photos to improve the facial recognition in Nest Cam IQ? And Nest was very, very upfront with us about saying, no, Nest is a completely separate company. We're apart from Google, even though we're so close to Google, and we will have our own facial data, we'll have our own images, we'll have our own machine learning, basically. Well, it used the same machine learning technology that Google, so they shared that, but they didn't share data across, they didn't share personal data across companies. And I think, whether they admit it or not, I think bringing Nest back into the fold was kind of them admitting, maybe this idea of keeping things separate is not so great for us in the long term. And maybe there's too many opportunities we're missing for better products by not sharing data across devices and across companies. So to me, it seems like when Google brought in Nest, they're making the implied decision to kind of break down those walls.
Yeah, the features over these privacy concerns, which the features are promising, honestly, because Google, interestingly, has not gone into consumer health yet, despite all these advancements in machine learning and AI. In Alphabet alone, companies like Verily are doing very interesting things with applying machine learning to technology and to digital health, to that space. And these products, applying machine learning to health has such a clear consumer focus. It is such a feature that people at the end of the day could like and find benefit from. Google Fit is barely updated. In my opinion, Google Fit is only kept to keep the fitness features in Wear OS around. But it could do so much more with what Google can correlate with your data. And imagine adding a scale or a blood pressure monitor or a thermometer, all of these things which Withings has and Nokia has made products for.
I think you make a very good point that This is an area that Google has not tapped at all. And maybe part of the reason is because of those privacy concerns, that they're being very cautious and conservative about how they enter these product areas. But it does seem like it's an obvious opportunity that they're missing out on. We even saw that this week with a story, right, about some augmented reality microscope that detects cancer or something.
So Google Brain is the company's AI, internal AI research team. And Google, in the past, they've been able to use machine learning to find cancer, to detect cancer in regular. So, in short, this previous advancement used machine learning to analyze images of cells and from there detect whether there's cancer in a rate that is similar to a human, to a trained pathologist. And what Google is doing now is they added this machine learning scanning to a microscope, an existing microscope. In this case, the augmented reality part of it is a live overlay. So as the researcher is looking into a microscope, the machine learnings are immediately, the algorithms are immediately running and immediately highlight possible cancer cells, and it makes the job of the pathologist so much easier. And this is a real tangible benefit to machine learning, and it is hard, but I think Google could definitely do some, could use machine learning to do so much easier, so much more tangible benefits for consumers. So there's tracking data, step data from your phone, and then maybe combine it with exercise data. All these things are data points which are accessible from Wear OS if you have a wearable with a heart rate monitor, or even the step tracking done by your phone. There could be so much potential here, and Google just hasn't touched it whatsoever.
Yep, I agree. And it'll be really exciting to see in the next 5 years, especially if this Nokia Health acquisition goes through. I mean, cross your fingers, because that sounds really exciting. And I really like all of Google's hardware products, and just seeing that expand, whether it be Google proper or Nest, is exciting to me. I could see them doing, a standalone fitness tracker. I mean, fitness trackers have been, really successful, Fitbit especially, scale, blood pressure monitors, all these things I think would be great hardware, and maybe the talent too from the Nokia Health division would be all great for Google to have. So I'm really excited to see where they go with this. In other notable stories this week, Motorola released a whole slew of new phones, a few in both the Moto G6 and E5 lineups. And while they do look like decent values for the money, I wrote an opinion piece about how Motorola is just a very, very sad company right now, and is kind of fallen from grace after having a few years of being one of my favorite Android OEMs. And we don't have to get into that now, we don't really have time, but you can go over to 95google.com and read my opinion on that. Next up, we had evidence of a new Alt OS mode, which suggests that the Pixelbook might soon be able to run a second operating system other than Chrome OS. Potentially Windows was one of the operating systems that was hinted at in the code on the Chromium repository. I think this is an interesting development, and I'm not sure if this is going to be something that comes as a feature in an update to the current generation Pixelbook, but it seems obvious that it's something that Google's working on. Our Kyle Bradshaw mentioned that this might be far-fetched, but the possibility of dual booting Fuchsia and Chrome OS, maybe for internal testing purposes, maybe for backwards compatibility a couple years down the line. We're not sure. All speculation at this point, but I brought up the point that having the ability to dual boot Windows and macOS is a big selling point, I think, for justifying the high price tag of a MacBook and the Pixelbook, which is obviously very premiumly priced at $1,000 and up. Having the ability to dual boot a different operating system on the hardware, which is obviously great. I think that would be a great selling point. What do you think about AltOS, Abner?
Yeah, it's if it gets Google's hardware out there, the Pixelbook hardware out there, it's a good move. But again, I think I agree with your original idea that it's maybe it's just for developers or it's for testing purposes. But whatever gets Google's hardware into the open, that's sounds good.
Yeah, and in other stories this week, we had the Google Play Store 9.7. Our Ben Schoen did his very first APK Insight post because Abner was out sick, unfortunately. Isn't that right?
Food poisoning.
Happens.
I'm actually just going to stay in a room for the next 2 weeks until IO to avoid getting sick. So that is my strategy to hit IO running.
We don't want to have you miss the most fun 3 days of the year. But anyways, Play Store 9.7 brings a new fully white UI, which happens to look kind of similar to the UI concept that our Alex Brooks shared with us, I think last week. And then there are also some updated DIY kits or something, Abner?
Yeah, Google did this really exciting thing for education. So again, AI is a push that Google is doing, and the latest one is called Google AIY, a combination of AI plus DIY. That's very cute. Anyway, so the idea is that you can make these devices that run machine learning algorithms. The first one was a voice kit where you could basically make a Google Assistant speaker. And the second is a vision kit, which you use to you make a cardboard thing with a camera inside. It runs a Raspberry Pi, and then you load it up with machine learning algorithms that can make a basic recognition device. It's all very cool, and Google is focusing it for the education market and making it widely available in Target stores, so that should really help. It just shows Google making a push for AI that is a bit more consumer friendly. And in similar news, let's talk about the app updates for the week. So, Sprint and Google killed the Go So Sprint announced that the Google Voice integration, the long-running Google Voice integration, is dying on June 1st. This, of course, comes as Voice it just announced new VoIP capabilities, but in this case, it appears that Sprint is just updating its network, and Google Voice will no longer be supported. Meanwhile, the Android Things OS, which is like Wear OS or Android TV, just a subset of Android designed for Internet of Things devices, is finally coming out of its long developer preview. This is the OS that powers smart displays, so given the timing with Google I/O and all, maybe we'll see an official launch of both in front of a big developer audience. We also saw the launch of Chrome 66. It hit the stable channel with features like restricting when media can autoplay, which is a really handy thing given how so disruptive some sites are. And we have this neat password export feature, which allows you to export the saved credentials from Chrome's built-in password monitor. Meanwhile, and lastly, Google Maps is testing this really convenient landmark-based directions. So when you're getting directions to navigation mode, Google Maps will, rather than say the street name, it'll say something like "Turn right after Burger King." And honestly, it's super convenient and just a very friendly spin to technology, and hopefully it sees a lighter launch soon.
Thanks a lot for giving us all that app news for the week, and thanks for giving it to us quick, because we are definitely running way over our typical 1 hour show. So it's been a good show. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. In the weeks ahead, we have Google I/O coming up. Obviously, that's definitely like number one on our list. And we just today booked our reservations for hotels, so we're excited about that, and it's coming up quick. So we will we're in talks about doing a live show on the ground on the keynote day. So stay tuned for more details on that. And we've got Google earnings coming up this upcoming Monday. But other than that, we just don't really have that much happening in the Google world in terms of things that we're highly anticipating. It's pretty much just Google I/O. You excited for it?
Yeah, it's basically a lull where Google is getting quieting down and getting ready for the big show.
Yeah, the calm before the storm. And until the storm, you can tune in to Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every Friday and publish every Saturday morning, and you can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms like iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google App Podcasts, Google Play Music, and you can even listen on our site at 9to5google.com if you would prefer that method. Thanks for tuning in, as always, and thanks to Abner for joining me, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.